This conversation between Johnny Vandermeer and Walter Langford is being taped in Johnny's backyard on January 10th, 1985. Okay, John, that name has to mean Dutch ancestry, hmm?
Yeah, my parents are from the island of Friesland.
Oh, really? But you were born in New Jersey.
I was born in Prospect Park, New Jersey. Yeah. Raised in Midland Park.
How'd you get your start in baseball?
Well, I was playing semi-pro ball in northern New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And going to the Depression area. And that's where I basically got scouted from.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go first, in the minors?
I was picked up by the Dodgers and signed by the Dodgers and taken spring training by the Dodgers and sent to Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. How did the Reds get a hold of you then?
Well, I was on a cover-up deal.
Uh-huh.
While I was in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I would go before Judge Landis. And the Landis awarded me to the Scranton Ball Club, and I had to play there for another year. And I was picked up there by Boston.
Hmm. Red Sox or Braves?
The Braves. Uh-huh. In the fall of 35,
mm-hmm.
and traded that winter for a bunch of ball players at Nashville, Tennessee, which was on a farm for the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville optioned me to Durham, where Frank Lane was the business manager.
You're kidding.
And with the Reds farm, and from there why I was bought by the Reds.
Mm-hmm. All right. Came up in 37.
That's right.
Do you remember your first game?
Yeah, I... My first ball game was a ball game was played in Cincinnati. And I could beat the last inning by a home run, 3-2, but Maxie Rush put the home run off in the ninth inning.
Did you start that game or did you come in?
I started. Yeah.
So that was your first game and your first start?
Beat me 3-2, I think.
Tough way to lose the first one. Golly. You were, that year you had two managers. Chuck Gresson, and at the end, Bobby Wallace.
I stayed there till after the All-Star game.
Oh,
I was optioned to Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
And then recall after Dresser was let go.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of good ball players on that roster. Hafey and Kyler and Lombardi.
Well, Lombardi was a great boy. Hafey was finishing up.
Yeah, he was finishing, and I guess... Callahan was there, and he was going down.
I took Bill's job.
Did you?
Yeah.
But Derringer was coming into his bust, I think, about that time.
I think Derringer lost 27 games that year.
Lost that many one year. Wait a minute, I'll tell you. Got it right here.
I just can't see Derringer losing 27 games in a
year. The year he lost 27 was 33.
33?
Yeah. In 37, he was 10-14. Anyway, hard to picture Derringer losing 27 games anytime.
That's right.
Well, then in 38, you rounded into real good form and not only had 15-10 season record, but set that unique business of the two no-hitters.
Well, I could have had a whole lot better year than 15-10. I hadn't landed in the hospital for a month.
Uh-huh. With what?
I had 7 balls in one ear and 6 in the other inside.
Good grief.
And I was out for a month and lost about 15 pounds in that period of time.
How do they treat balls that are inside?
Well, there wasn't, didn't know much about them then.
Yeah.
And all I could do was just put heat lamps on them. Today, they have antibiotics, but there's no antibiotics before the war.
That's right. had Bill McKechnie as manager that year.
Bill came to us in 38.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, he was a great manager.
Oh, well, everybody tells me that, Jim.
Well, in my area, I guess I'd have to put McCarthy, Bill Terry, and McKechnie.
Yeah. Glenn Wright talked to McKechnie about being a great manager when he hit him with Pittsburgh, and others likewise. Any guy that can win with three different teams in three different cities.
Was an outstanding defensive manager.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't much of an offensive manager because he never had a club that could be an offensive club, and so you couldn't evaluate him as an offensive manager, but he sure was a great defensive manager.
In that season, before we get around to talking about those no-hitters, Frank McCormick was coming along.
Frank McCormick played with me in Durham.
Yeah?
We both played together, and he had 400 down there that year. I got the minor league Valley Repair Award on that
one. Good time. And you had Lonnie Fry and...
Fry came to us when McKechnie came. McKechnie got him. About him and Bill Werber and kind of and Riley Berger kind of changed our club. And of course, Bucky Waters joined us.
Yeah, that's right.
The night of my second no hitter.
Was that when you joined the team?
That was the deadline, June 15th.
Trading
day.
Yeah. All right. Now, what were your main pitches? What did you rely on that year?
Well, I was a hard thrower. I was a power pitcher, and I had a good curveball.
There weren't as many other pitchers in those days, as I recall. Very few. Well, there were some screwball pitchers like Carl Hubble.
Yeah, he was around at that time. He's pretty good.
I would have to say so. Now, come to June 11th. Was that a night game in Crosley Field?
No, that was a Saturday
afternoon. That was a day game.
Day game.
And you shut out the Braves 3-0 and gave no hits. How about walks, hit batters, errors? Did they get many base runners, in other words?
I didn't have an error in either ball game. They were both clean.
Yeah.
I think there was only about, I could be corrected on this, but I think there was only about 5 fly balls in that ball game. The rest were hit. I had a pretty good sinker that day. And I wasn't real quick. I didn't have my real good stuff. But it was one of my few days, I guess, I had control. And hitting the ball on the ground.
Did you feel the pressure before it got to the end?
I didn't go for a no-hitter in either ball game until the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Either ball game, and that way I never put any, I could
say
that I didn't put pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And I had a little philosophy about the ninth inning. I used to like to finish anything I started. And I'd get to the ninth inning and I'd always say, you've got 20 good pitches left.
Pretty good.
And I'd start with 20 and 19. Count myself down. Wade Hoyt done this. That's where I picked it up.
Yeah.
And... so that gave me a little bit of incentive in the last inning that I pushed myself a little bit.
Now, the one 4 days later on the 15th was a night game. The first, as I understand, the first night game at Ebbets Field.
That's right.
Yeah. And that was 6-0. Any close calls on somebody getting hit against you that game?
Well, the only... close caller was, I would say, in both ball games was Buddy Hassett. Hit a line drive back to the box that I knocked down, and I had a kind of scurry a little bit to pick it up and throw him out. That was about probably the toughest ball handled in either one of the two ball games.
Great. Now, do I remember right that in your next start, you went along for 3 innings or better before, was it Deb Garms got a single off of you?
I had 3 2/3 innings, and Stengel had gone to coach first base that inning instead of third base, which he normally did. And
yeah.
And knowing Casey, why always doing something, why he cut across the infield that inning as I was going to the mound, walked in front of me and said, John, I knew Case because I had been spring training with the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And he was a coach there. And he walked across and he said, John, he says, we're not trying to beat you. He said, we're just trying to get a base hit off of you. Mm-hmm. That was Casey's way of doing things and saying things and why he was a great individual.
He really was. They all tell me that. Now, let's go back.
Incidentally, if I may add this, the game prior to my first no-hitter.
That's where I was going back to.
I had a three-hitter. I gave up two hits in the first inning to the Giants and shut them out. And in the ninth inning, Hank Lever came up, pinched it. I hit him on a fist and run foul just behind Lonnie Fry in second base for a base hit. So instead of having, I had 21 two-third innings.
Uh-huh.
Hadn't been for that crappy hit of Hank's, I would have had over three ball games.
That's right. Close to 30. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what the record is right now, but isn't 21 and two-thirds probably the record?
And successive it is.
Yeah,
I think Cy Young has the record of 23.
Hmm.
There was four or five relief appearances involved in it.
He didn't pitch all of it.
That's right.
Anyway, it's all his. Well, Harvey Haddix had 12 innings before he lost a tough one in the 13th, but I've never read of his having any span of hitless innings before and after that to mm-hmm. come close to yours. Well, you know, there are about six or eight records that still exist in the majors that still exist or recently have been set that it's kind of doubtful they'll ever be broken, and yours is one of them.
Well, you got DiMaggio.
DiMaggio's 56 games.
You got Hornsby's four or five, four times 400.
Yeah.
Somebody goes up the road while own the franchise. you have a stolen base record that just wouldn't take.
Yeah, that's the recent one, Brock. And there is I doubt that anybody's going to break Hank Aaron's 754 home runs now. But we can't say for sure.
Well, that's possible. We're over stepping our ball up.
Well, that's true, too.
DiMaggio's consecutive.
That's awfully hard
that's
to
be
imagine.
Tough.
Another one that I don't think will ever be broken is Lou Gehrig's 2,130 consecutive games.
No, I don't think so either.
And I'd have to be convinced that somebody's going to break Hack Wilson's 190 RBIs in one season.
That's right. I recall that one.
Yeah. 1930. And most unlikely that anyone will ever break Cy Young's 513 wins, even though some of them were before the modern, so-called modern period.
No, that record will be broken up. It's a pitching record now.
Yeah. And it's doubtful, I believe, that anybody will break Walter Johnson's 113 career shutouts.
I doubt that also.
Yeah. Then I've got Grover Alexander had a single season record of 16 shutouts in one year.
In Philadelphia, Shad Park.
That's true.
If they break the record, they sure wouldn't break it in Shad Park. I've pitched that park, I know that one.
And another one that I believe is absolutely safe is Joe Sewell's record of only four strikeouts in 155 games, every inning of every game in 1925.
Mm-hmm.
And he went also 115 consecutive games without striking out in 1929. So you're right there with the most solid records that I think baseball can offer.
Records are made to be broken.
Well, that's right.
I look at my record as it won't be broken because I don't think anybody's going to pitch three games in a row, and I don't think anybody's going to have to go beyond 3 2/3 innings beyond that to tie the second record.
Yep. All right, now I'm interested in this. In 1939 and 40, you suddenly dipped down to 5-9 in 39 and 3-1 in 40, or 1-3 rather. No?
No.
3-1, you're right. Did you have a sore arm?
I pulled my arm in just before 4th of July in 1939 in Pittsburgh on a wet field. The game was held up. And I started the inning after the rain, and my front foot slipped, and I tore my back up. I did not tear, I was very fortunate, I didn't tear up a throwing muscle, a power muscle, so to speak.
Yeah.
Probably be the correct term. I tore up a follow-through muscle, and I could probably pitch with about 2.5 weeks rest. That follow-through muscle would then relax.
Yeah.
If I threw too much, that follow-through muscle would act up again. So I was very fortunate in the fact that it was a follow-through muscle and not a power muscle, and I was able to pitch for years afterward. That's why I went to Indianapolis.
Uh-huh.
It is known in the media that I went over there because I was wild. That was not the reason, because I had a couple of options left on me. In fact, I could have been optioned out of the big leagues when I left. And this was kind of hushed up and said that...
But
I had to go back to Indianapolis. My position was, I'd gone to the doctor in Philadelphia and he loosened it up. And my position was I had to go to Indianapolis and I had to pitch. And we were trying to win a pennant, one game ahead, so speak, every day. And it wasn't time to mess with me. So I went over there and got my arm straightened out. And had a pretty good year at Indianapolis, two months at Indianapolis. In fact, I threw a one hitter over there and got beat by a no-hitter by a freak one over there.
You're kidding.
Yeah, left-hand hitter hit the third base bag.
Sure.
And it bounced up in the air for a base hit. But I went over there basically because of my shoulder.
Yeah.
A lot of people in baseball know that, but the media was never used to.
Well, those were two unfortunate years for you to be laid up, sort of, because they were pennant years.
Well, I came back to be eligible for the series, and that's when I won my three ball games.
At the end.
In fact, I won the game that won the pennant in Philadelphia and had to go 13 innings to win it. I beat UNLV.
Yeah.
I hit a double and tagged up on a fly ball and came in on a squeeze play in the 13th inning.
My God.
And then McKechnie took me out and Joe Banks finished the ball game.
Yeah.
But that was one of the highlights of my career.
It had to be.
Because I went 13 innings. I went just as strong at 13 as I did in the first. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I knew that my shoulder was fully restored, and that meant as much to me as a World Series.
You were ready to go.
It was one of the thrills of my life.
But you didn't get into the series.
I was supposed to start the third game of the series in Detroit, first in Detroit. And I was all set to pitch the ball game until about 20 minutes before the game, and McKechnie switched over to Whitey Moore.
I wondered about that, just looking at the World Series history there.
And I went in and got Whitey Moore in the first inning with the bases full, nobody out. I got out of the mess. And I think we lost, they got, they had three runs in. And I think we got beat 3-2, and I went out in the seventh. So it was just one of those switches.
That was too bad. All right, now, you had a good year in 41, 16-13. with the team finished third, though. You had six shutouts. Another thing that interests me is I made a study some years ago, a couple of years ago, on the ratio of shutouts to the total wins in the majors, and really mighty few of them over 20%. Yours is better than 25%.
I had about 30-some shutouts.
30 shutouts and 119 wins, what the book says. Larry Finch had just about the same thing. He had 40 and 197, mm-hmm. which figures out to just over 20%. Mm-hmm. And some of those great names, like Johnson and Alexander and a few others, Koufax and whatnot, will get up to the upper 20s, but 25% is mighty good ratio.
After the 2 years of the Reds, our ball club went down. I was never on a good ball club again. And those, mm-hmm. actually, I never pitched on a real good ball club. The 2 years that the Reds won the pennant, there's not very much said about this, but I still think it's a record. We won 51 ball games by one run, or 52.
I bet that is a record.
And come back at 49 and 40 by one run. We were a one-run ball club, and as Joe Bake said in the first inning, you get one run, he says, "Buddy, there's your lead, and go hold it." But we never did come up with that. We lacked that extra hitter. We lacked one good hitter from winning ball games by two and three.
Yeah. Elmer Riddle had quite a season in 41, 19 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then was a real flop the next day.
Had a slam from a slider. And then came back.
Came back again and had another good season after.
And got another slam for a slider.
And that did him in.
And that he went to Pittsburgh. But Elmer was hitting that corner there for 2 years, but that slider went. And he needed that slider to win in the big leagues. Elmer couldn't have won without a slider.
Didn't have a good fastball.
He didn't have it, but he had outstanding control of the slider.
All right. What'd you do? You went into World War II in 44 and 45.
I went in the Navy.
Yeah, where'd you go and what'd you do?
I went to Sampson, New York, and wanted to go to Great Lakes, but they stopped that stuff. Everybody going to Great Lakes, so I ended up in Sampson. I was the first trick, you know, better ballfighter that went to service that had to go to was Sampson. I was assigned to Sampson. Mm-hmm. I was working for the government at the time, and I seen it come over the wires in Newark, New Jersey. So I went to Sampson. I managed the ball club in Sampson Naval Training Center.
Good.
And booked all the games and brought big league clubs in there, which had never been brought in there before, all minor league clubs.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to Honolulu and played in the Army-Navy World Series.
Uh-huh.
And after that series was over, we went on a tour of the Pacific for about a month, and then they split us all up, and then the last year and a half, we were stationed all over the Pacific, and I stayed at Guam.
Mm-hmm. Great Lakes had quite a team in those years.
Yeah, we played exhibition games. We'd go up there and play exhibition. Later on, when I went to Sampson, we get all the big clubs to come to Sampson.
Yeah. I was teaching at Notre Dame in those years. I taught at Notre Dame for 43 years, and the Great Lakes team came to Notre Dame and play the college team there, and Johnny Mize was on first base, and I forget who else, but there were a lot of names there.
Well, we played very little. Once we got in the Pacific, down below, we played very little ball. We played Sunday afternoons. We got together. We played in dungarees and underwear, heavy shirts to sweat. And we played anybody who wanted to play us. CBs, we didn't care who they were. Maybe a team off of a ship. We knew we had to play. So we did this the year around, and Sunday afternoon, we'd basically play at base hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Then in 46, the Reds finished sixth, and Ewell Blackwell showed up.
Blackwell was the greatest right-handed pitcher I ever saw.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. You ask any right-handed hitter that played against Ewell Blackwell, and they wanted no part of him.
He had that whip motion. Huh?
He had motion. He looked one way and threw another way. Yeah, fantastic stuff.
He was pretty tall, wasn't he? 6'6".
He was 6'6". He crossfired.
Yeah.
And that's what caught up with Blackie. Blackie did too much crossfiring and threw against his body.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't have to do this, but he delighted in doing it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a bull. He was a long, tough, and
good.
But I'll say this, if Ewell Blackwell could have pitched for 10 or 12 or 14 years, there would have been some records in the book. I've never seen a right-hand hitter that wanted to go up against Ewell Blackwell. I only ever saw one guy hit him. His name was Bammer Rowell.
Yeah, that was Bammer.
A left-hand hitter.
You played it, according to this, at 190 pounds. But you were 6'1".
I was 6'1".
6'1". 190 pounds, that's pretty solid.
I held my weight well. I'd dropped to 185 pounds in the winter time, during spring training, 185, and put on weight.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed away from going in over and getting down. I thought that was the hard way.
That's right.
So I starved myself in January and February, came in 5 pounds under.
Real good.
And I could go to work.
All right. Now in 47, you're still there with the Reds, and Johnny Mune came in as manager.
That's right.
His team finished fifth. And in 48, you had a pretty good year, 17-14, but the team was seventh, and by the end of the year, Bucky Walters replaced Mune.
That's right.
You had Klazuski, Sauer.
Sauer didn't do very much with us. He played for us at Syracuse. He's out of our farm system.
Yeah.
He had a fantastic year at Syracuse, but he couldn't get going with us, so we traded him to the Cubs, and he got chilling again.
He had some good seasons with the Cubs. Well, Klazuski was a pretty solid player for you for several years there.
Well, when Ted came up, he was not a good ball player.
No, I'm not surprised to hear
that. He was a big fellow.
Yeah.
And he couldn't pull the ball.
Imagine that.
And he was a left field hitter. And he worked at it.
I only saw him in his last years, and he was a pull hitter then.
He got the pull. But when Ted came up, he was a left center field hitter. And he didn't have the power which he would naturally have when he went to right field. And after about 3 years later, Ted became a good hitter, although he a little bit desired to be fielding. Particularly when he came up.
Yeah. Well, I bet you can tell me about your only home run in the majors, which was in 48.
Well, there's a little story to that. Bucky Wallace and I were very close. Mm-hmm. He was a great hitter.
He sure was.
Yeah, I saw him win 27. He probably won about 17 in his own butt. I wouldn't pitch to Wallers in a jam when he was hot. I'd pitch to Fry, but not to Wallers.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said if I was a base runner, I did all the pinch running all of my career.
Is that right?
And he said, well, you may, as become the manager, he said, you may run for me, he says, but you'll never hit for me. I said, if you ever hit a home run, he says, I'll leave the ballpark. And I hit one over the scoreboard in Cincinnati, which was 385 to the foot of it.
Yeah.
Off of the pitcher in a red barrack.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I came around third base, and he said he'd leave the ballpark, and he'd buy the champagne. When I came around third base, he was going in the clubhouse. That night he bought the champagne.
That's a good story. Real good. And in 49, Luke Sewell came over toward the end of the year replacing Bucky.
That's right.
And you had the likes of Peanuts Lowry, Walker Cooper. He must have been headed downhill.
He was heading down. Yeah.
And Raffenberger, wasn't he a character?
Raffy had the best velocity in pitching anybody ever had in the big leagues.
What was that?
You got him out of the first inning, or he went nine innings. He didn't get knocked out in the fifth or the seventh or the eighth. He
had to get him in the first.
He was a spot pitcher.
Uh-huh.
And if he didn't hit that spot, Raffy was in trouble and he'd be out there in the first.
Mm-hmm. And Harry Fox had a good year that season.
Harry had that, and then Harry hurt his arm.
That's right,
hurt
he never did anything there.
That's right, yeah. Hurt his arm.
And in 50, you moved over to the Cubs under Frankie Frisch. How was Frankie as a manager?
No comment. I played ball for too many years for McKechnie.
That's a good point. Then in 51, you were with Cleveland under Al Lopez.
That's right. They had a great pitching staff in Cleveland at that time. That was the greatest staff I ever saw. We had a great one in Cincinnati, you know, when myself and Waters and Derringer got going.
Right.
We started them and we finished them.
Mm-hmm.
But Cleveland had four of them.
That's right. At that
they
time.
Had Feller, Wynn, and
Lemon
and Garcia.
Yeah.
The other part of the ball club was not much speed.
Mm-hmm.
It was a slow ball club.
Yeah.
And not a whole lot of route, and there wasn't an outstanding defensive ball club at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there was fantastic pitching on that. They started them and they finished them.
Yeah.
There were four tough pitchers with great attitude to win.
Yeah.
If attitude means anything, there was four guys.
I don't have my book here to look at, but they had one season where they had 420 game winners, I think. And I don't know whether that was the year or not. It may have been when they took the pennant in 54.
Well, all four of those guys, after two base hits in a row, any one of the four would deck the next guy. Great pitching, fantastic.
All right, now, did they have Kenny Keltner third in that year?
No, they had Al Rosen.
Oh, yeah.
And Al had the year I was there, Al had a real good year.
Yeah.
He had
some good years.
He was, Al was basically the real thump on our ball club as far as consistency was. Mm-hmm. Larry Doby was there, but Larry,
he was
up and down, but Al was very aggressive for a ball. Only played about 6-7 years, but he was a good one.
Yeah. Lopez said this morning that Doby was fighting himself too much. He was wanted to do better than he was and would get to worrying and not produce his best.
Well, sometimes Doby probably over-hustled himself.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the outfield, he run right on by five balls. Al probably told me.
He said that.
For his great speed, he was not a great outfielder.
Yeah. Who was the best manager you played for? McKechnie?
Well, there's no question
no
about
doubt.
That.
Mm-hmm.
He could. He was a great handler of pitchers, and he loved pitchers to go nine innings, and he would put you on a system of starting every so many days, and we started against, regardless of who you was playing, he got you on that rotation, he got your system going, and he stayed with it, and he played that certain percentage that he never violated, that certain percentage. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't violate that certain percentage.
Mm-hmm. All right, and your best team that you were on, you think, was the 40 Reds team?
Yeah, the 40 Red Club was a better club than the 39, but as I said, we lacked that. Raleigh Berger just had finished up in Indianapolis with me, and we lost that right-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
And they could pitch around Lombardi. And I might add this. If there's anything I've seen in baseball that I don't agree with, why isn't Ernie Lombardi in the Hall of Fame? That's an absolute disgrace.
I don't understand that either. In fact, there are several mysteries, but that's one
that's
of the
biggest.
Yeah, I think so.
He is the only catcher in the history of the game that led the league twice in hitting.
That's right. And if you think of it this way, for Lombardi to hit 341 or more with his speed, he had to get some, a lot of awfully clean hits. There weren't little old things, he squibs that he'd beat out on the infield.
And another thing that Lombardi goes down with Black Mike and throwing.
Was he really?
Lombardi,
I knew he was good.
That's great throwers of the game. Never worried about anybody running without throwing the ball.
They don't have as many great throwing catchers these days, do they?
That's one of the big weaknesses in the game today, is throwing catchers.
Outside of, now the bench is gone, Carter.
Carter's a real good throw. Yeah. But I'm talking about, I saw Cochran throw, I saw Hartnett throw. Hartnett was a great thrower.
Oh, yes.
Dickey was a good thrower.
Yes.
Kerr was a good thrower.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, there was several good throwers. Walker Cooper was a good thrower.
Mm-hmm.
But Lombardi was a great with them. Well, they weren't any better than Lombardi.
Why do you reckon they can't come up with catchers and throw like that anymore now?
I don't know. I don't know.
Mystery.
I only watch games for television. I see this throw is up here, and that throw is over there, and that throw is over there. First five was a great tiger. Billy Herman was a great tiger. Campanella was a good thrower.
Yeah.
It means a lot to have a good tiger down there because they just swipe that ball in there and half the time they don't touch it. But if the throw is there, if the throw beats you, you're out.
No
umpire's going to stick his neck out for that. But the throws aren't there.
I don't think as many catchers have as a quicker release as they used to. Among other things.
I think that a great throwing catcher has got to come out of their firing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to have a good arm, and he's got to have accuracy.
That's right.
The thing that Lombardi was great for, Lombardi was a sidearm thrower.
Mm-hmm.
And there were also a lot of good catchers. A lot of catchers sit back there and consistently call for fastballs that they knew somebody was running.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who was running, what the game situation was, Lom was just as soon apt to throw it, call for a curveball because he came out there throwing. If he was down low, he came out there sidearm.
Mm-hmm. A left-handed batter never got in his way with a sidearm delivery, huh?
Well, he could come up over the top.
Yeah.
But he was one of the few guys that could throw hard sidearm.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And he would pick off about 5 to 7 guys a year off of first base and thrown behind left-hand hitter sidearm. He can do that.
Yeah,
he
can see what you're saying.
Yeah. Great thrower.
Real good. Who was the best hitter that you saw in your day?
Well, everybody's got a cousin, and everybody's got somebody they can get out and somebody they can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
Walker Cooper hit left-handers real well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only towards the end of Walker Cooper's career, just before he joined us when he was still with the Giants, and I started to get Cooper out.
Huh.
Everything he hit off me was a shot someplace. He gave me a problem.
Hmm.
Bermuda was just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Stan will tell you that I got him out better than anybody in the game. And the only reason I did was because he used to swing a bad balls off of me.
Did he really?
And I believe I was probably the only pitcher in the game that he ever swung at Bob balls, because he did not swing at Bob balls. I'd get balls in on him and tail in on him, and he'd step into the ball. He wouldn't throw it away.
Mm-hmm. Well, who was the best hitter in the league? Not against you, but in the league.
Consistently?
In your day,
Well, yeah, I always looked at the hitters who might hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And each pitcher has guys who could hurt you. Yeah. Medrick was a fellow who would give you a problem.
He could give anybody a problem.
If I want to say probably great hitter, well, P. Wainer was a good one.
And he could hurt you as well as hit for average and everything.
And Mize could hurt you.
Mize
would hurt you.
Yeah.
Hottie, in the Pentagrams, Well, there was a real problem.
There was something there.
There was a real problem in the Pentagon.
Sure.
Wasn't that much of a problem in Cincinnati because our fence was 387,
mm-hmm.
and we could make them hit them by fire. But in the Pentagon, mm-hmm. it was a home run.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
All right. Or do you have an idea of somebody you'd call the best all-around player in your day?
Well, I would say that in my day, I probably have to kind of lean to Musial.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I lean to Musial is the fact that he could play two positions as well. There's not very many great golfers who play two positions.
Mm-hmm.
Not very much ever said and written about that.
Mm-hmm.
But DiMaggio couldn't play two positions.
No.
He tried it. A lot of great ones. Williams couldn't do it.
No.
But Stan came in from left field to first
just
base.
Just as well at first base.
Stan was never given credit for his ability to score from first base. He was a great base runner.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't steal bases. But when he took off, he could run those bases from second home, first to third,
uh-huh.
first to home. I thought Musial was a great base runner.
Well, that's certainly
so he did a few other things besides the...
good solid choice.
Yeah. That ball.
What was your biggest throw in baseball, the two no-hitters?
Well, everybody gets asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got a little bit different answer for that.
Good.
I think my biggest throw was we're all kids and we all wanted to be big league ball players.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got to Cincinnati after about 5 years, 4 or 5 years. When I got my own locker, with my own name over the top of that locker,
mm-hmm.
with my name in the uniform, and I was in the big leagues, I fulfilled a boy's dream. And if I had to pick an individual throw,
I think so.
I would say that was my biggest thrill.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Or that 13-inning ball game
mm-hmm.
in Philadelphia was a thrill. And
sure.
Of course, I participated, you know, in that longest scoreless game in the big leagues also.
God.
I pitched, I think it was either 15 or 17 innings in Brooklyn of a 19-inning ball game. That went 0-0 and had to be called out of darkness because you wasn't allowed to turn the lights on.
Yeah.
And,
I'll be darned about what year was that, do you remember?
That was, I think, right after the war.
Yeah.
Right after the war. Larry Gumbert finished it. And I got thrown out from first base with two outs.
Gumbert, right.
Yeah.
Did
and,
you?
McKechnie took me out. I think I went to first 15 or 16.
Yeah, Gumbert joined you in 47.
Mm-hmm.
Well, must have been that year. Yeah.
That year or the year after.
Yeah.
But the game went 19 innings, and at that time we were not allowed to throw the lights on to continue the game. So we started at 1:30 and was called at 7 o'clock that night. I think if that happened today, why Union would call a strike, or the agent would run on the field, or...
Well, the manager would use six pitchers.
But I only gave up five hits in it, and I think that was probably the greatest game I ever played.
That's wonderful. Well, did you have a big disappointment? What would be your biggest disappointment out of baseball?
Well, I would say probably my biggest disappointment would be when I came up with that arm trouble.
Have to be.
Those 2 years at that critical
exactly.
stage.
Yeah.
The other thing that really hurt me was after I got that straightened out, I went into the service
mm-hmm.
at the prime of my life.
That's right.
But that I don't regret.
No, and that's not something that there was much choice on anyway.
Well, I think that as you get older, you're proud to serve your country.
Yeah.
So
I don't
regret that.
I don't blame you. Okay, after 1951, what'd you do?
I managed in Red Swanson.
For how long? Where and for how long?
My first year was at Douglas, Georgia. I won a pennant. And I went to Palatka, Florida. 2 years, and I won a pennant there. I went to Daytona for a year and come in second place. Then I went to the Three-I League, Burlington, Iowa. And 2 years at Topeka, Kansas. Then came back here to, right here to Tampa and broke in Pete Rose.
I'll be dead.
And stayed here a year and a half, went to Syracuse in the International League. And in the meantime, in the off season, I had been working for a Joe's Look Brewing Company. And I had a chance to go to the Mets coaching. But,
Casey was managing.
Mm-hmm. And John Murphy was, there was a working agreement between the Mets and Syracuse, that's how it was developed. And, but the business world appeared too much for me at that time and my age, and I went to security agent. So I worked for Slutz and retired as a military sales manager for him for 20 years with him, which ended up, for me, better than my baseball career.
Yeah, I can believe it. And now you're retired completely.
I've been retired 10 years.
Yeah. When did you settle down here in Sarasota?
In Tampa?
Yeah, in Tampa, I mean.
I came after the war.
Mm-hmm.